I did throw the mic.
How was
and
that?
Also, it sucked. It sucked. and I sucked. It was in the All-Star game. I don't think I got. It took me about six batters to get an out.
Was there any camaraderie there, at all, or like?
Yeah, we were pros. You know, Mike's a good guy, man. But I mean, everybody makes it such a big deal. But I had some battles with other guys too.
By the way, for the audience that maybe doesn't follow, just play the clip because we got two of them. Yeah. Pick one of them, whichever one you want.
Yeah,
this is one of them. You and Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the broken bat.
And you grabbed the bat and you threw it back at him.
Well, no, if I'd have thrown it at him, I'd have got him. But I threw it on the on-deck circle. Everybody, and TV made it look close. And they were saying, oh, you said it was the ball. Well, when you're 60 feet away and the bat shatters before a piece of the head, when the head first came, what do we know to be the head of the bat? But when it first came towards me, you can see I went in a fielding position.
Yeah.
I thought it was a line drive back at me. But there's a couple other guys that wanted a piece of him before that. So,
yeah, everyone talks about that you threw the bat at him. It's like,
no,
hold on, the bat almost hit me first.
Yeah, well, again, I've broken guys.
Let's not make Roger seem innocent here. Roger, you were trying to get in his head as well. You were.
Yeah, no, you don't.
You were showing toughness.
The 98 mile an hour fastball is what I'm trying to get into his mind.
Yeah,
when the bat broke, the first sphere you see, I'm 54 feet away once I release the ball, and once you see that coming at you, that's why I went and filmed it. And of course, by fate, it takes two hops and it's in my lap, and I take it, and I don't even know he didn't know where the ball was. That's why he was jogging.
Yeah,
and I whistled it over.
That was epic.
There was a picture that on TV, it looks like it might be from us, but it was further than that. And I said, just give me another ball. There was a bunch of stuff leading up to that World Series, trying to make it. It was, he and I were almost a bigger story than the World Series.
Yeah.
And I was really pissed about that. But we also had a scouting report, which was fine by me, because our guys going to the scouting report, they said, we're pitching him in, fastball's in, and if you miss inside his jersey. And it's okay with me because Mike's a great hitter. He hit every breaking ball that I think I threw to him. And so I had no problem just trying to live in there. And, again, it was a game like similar when I talked about Reggie Jackson. Somebody like Piazza, they're going to get your best. He's one of their obviously best players in the league at the time and on the Mets for sure. And I was sitting at about 91, 92. He stepped in. I think all three pitches, including the one that shattered back, were about 98. Reggie bitches about at me, which I'll see. I tell the story at banquets, which he loves. I wanted to get to the big leagues to face Reggie, and I was sitting at about 93 with, you know, most of the guys, and Reggie was hitting fourth, and here we go. I mean, I was like 97, 98 to Reggie. Reggie's like, what's going on? I go, you're Reggie Jackson. I mean, come on.
Amped up.
So, yeah, you're gonna get everybody's best. There's no days off for guys like that.
I like what you said. You said in an interview, you said guys, you question who's the toughest hitter you face. You obviously gave the love to Reggie Jackson because that's who you wanted to face off. But then you said you never had a problem with home run hitters because even Pujols, you said, you have one pitch every time. If you miss it, it's over. I'm going to get you, right? So you said something like that. And he said the guys you had a problem with were more the
contact.
The contact, like the Tony Gwynn type of guys. So who were some of the guys, who were some of the tough guys?
Man, just to – you know, in the American League, a few teams, they had guys that were – they just had great eye-hand coordination. You make a bastard pitch, 0-2, and with – especially at Fenway Park, there's no foul ground. It'd be different pitching in Oakland. That's the most foul ground, you know. So they would just – they're good enough. I tell them that guys in the big leagues can put wood on a bullet. Doesn't matter how hard you throw. They can spoil a really good pitch. So if I get an 11-pitch at bat with you in the first inning, now I'm not getting to the ninth inning, which I know that sounds what we just talked about guys going for. When I said nine, people are going nine innings. Then I might only be an eight-inning pitcher. It happens again, I'm only getting to the seventh. So I'm throwing my two-seamer, which I call a bowling ball. I threw a heavy two-seamer down in the zone. I want you to hit it, what we call the kitty litter. If you ever look at the place in front of home plate where they water it down really good, other home teams water it down more and they put more – dry dirt on it, because you hit it in that, it's like hitting kitty litter. It stops the ball from getting through the infield. And then sometimes the guys will grow, like at Wrigley, they'll grow that grass 4 inches high. It's like hitting out a U.S. Open rough. It's not getting through that. And
4 inches high, Wrigley?
If you're a ground ball pitcher, I mean, that's 6-4-3 all day. So that's why they, you know, you can do that. But those guys, now Tony Gwynn's a whole different animal. I faced Tony in an All-Star game, and I tried to ask some of the guys, hey, I know Tony, because I watched Tony take batting practice, and he played around the world with his bat and the ball in batting practice. His first two swings, he would hit it into the cage that he was in. Next two down on the chalk line and left. Next two in the gap, center field, right field, come all the way around to pulling two homers down the right field line.
It's crazy.
That's how good he was with where the ball was going. So I thought the guys were messing with me. They go, you're going to face Tony Gwynn. Throw him a 94-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle. I go, that's funny. You guys want him to take me deep. They go, no. If you pitch him away, he's going to hit a double that way. You pitch him in, he's going to pull you. I'm telling you, throw it right. I got a photo on my phone in the All-Star game. Houston, my first one. I throw it right down the middle. He swings right through it, kind of looking at me. He can't believe it. And then he ended up flying out, but it was a guy exactly, you know, we had a Tony Gwynn. It was Wade Boggs.
Oh, yeah.
Boggsy.
Oh, yeah.
Could,
third base.
Boggsy could hit with his eyes closed, with the sun shining right in his eyes.
Interesting swing.
Yeah, he's just a flat out hitter. He could
Paul Molitor, was he
dangerous,
tough to face?
Was dangerous, he very handsy?
Very
yeah,
handsy.
Good call. Yeah.
Larry Walker, did you ever pitch to Larry Walker?
I may have. I've met Larry at some golfing events later, and we never really talked. But I'm going to say 24 years, Badge, for sure. I probably faced him.
Bagwell, did you ever pitch at Bag? Because I know he
was. Exhibition game, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, Baggy.
So if we put Frank Thomas, Juan Gonzalez, those guys, well, those are AL, right? Mm-hmm. So you pitch with those guys.
Yeah.
Do you have any stories with Juan or Frank or just, you know, another player you pitched at?
Just good hitters. I mean, you got to catch them on the right day.
How about Griffey?
Griff was tough. Griff had some homes. My story about Griff, we were in All-Star games together, and I had the two older boys. They're little. And this is when Nintendo was big up in Seattle. You know, he'd get all the Nintendo games he could get. So the boys down messing around the lobby or whatever, and they got on the elevator. They run to the room. We're getting ready to go over for media day. And they're all giddy. Dad, we just met King Griffey Jr. I go, you did? Yeah, what's up? He goes, he said for us to tell you that when you face him in the second half, if you throw him some fastballs right down the middle, he'll give us all the Nintendo games. I go, you stay away from him. Yeah.
The kid.
Yeah, I said, you stay away from Griff.
Bad influence.
Do Pat a favor here. Pat's guy was Juan Gonzalez, was it not?
Juan was my guy.
No, he's dangerous.
Any good Juan Gonzalez stories for Pat?
I'm pretty sure I faced him with the Rangers a lot.
Yeah.
I just, you know, he was dangerous. He's a guy that, you know, you had to stay out of his little hot spot because he's just so strong. I was thinking when you brought up Molitor, Robin Yount. Robin Yount story, I'm like right off the campus. So I got a little piss and vinegar and, you know, feeling pretty good. And we're in Milwaukee, and Ralph Houck's our manager. Now, Ralph, you know, older, so some of the scouting reports weren't on par. And, you know, I had a veteran staff, Bruce Hurst, who gave me my nickname, the Rocket, Hurstie gave me that. We had some veteran guys, you know, on the pitching staff. And so now I'm facing Molitor. I was getting out, and this Robin Yount comes up. And he's already won one MVP at shortstop. He's going to win another one in center field, right, in the American League. And the scouting research said, we're going to pitch him away. We're up 3-0, and I throw him one about 96 on the outside corner, knee high. He hits it. It goes by this ear. I can hear it. It sounds like bacon in a – it barely missed me. It lands second row, dead center field at old Milwaukee. That dude, old Bernie or whatever, is going down the slide and the damn balloons.
Yeah, yeah.
All that's going on. Homer, 3-1. I was like pissed off. I was like, man, that was damn good. I can't believe that. Comes up next guy, Molitor's on. I walked him. He got a hit. It's 5-1, seventh inning, I think. I throw one. It's about at least a ball off the plate. It goes by this ear into the bleachers, about third row. People going crazy. They pull me out of 5-3. I'm in the tunnel. It's old tunnel, old nasty tunnel there. And they didn't have covers on the lights. And I'm hitting it with my glove. I'm busting lights. You can hear me cussing and swearing. F this Robin. Yeah, this bullshit. And I got a group of pitchers following me. And I get upstairs and I get in the ice. And this is, again, no, I don't think cell phones are. And if you called the clubhouse, you had to go through the operator at the main stadium. And then she would patch you into the visiting clubhouse. So I'm icing. And the guys come up. And after I cooled off, and Hurstie looks at me, he goes, Rock, let me tell you something. He goes, great game. He goes, but because I said, he ain't that, you know, I must have said he ain't that effing good or something, you know. and Hersty and the guys are like, first of all, that's robbing you out. Two things. He is that effing good. Mm-hmm. And number two is, don't listen to Ralph's scouting reports. They're a little out of date. And I go, thanks for telling me that now.
Yeah, well, so, you know, him and Brett got 3,000 same season, by the way.
Unbelievable.
Which was kind of wild. Yeah, KC and Milwaukee.
So now, I'm icing, phone rings in the clubhouse. Game's over, the guys are shaking hands, they're on their way up, and that's why she didn't pouch. They say, you got a phone call, it's your mother on the phone. So, why my mom calling the clubhouse? I mean, this is weird. She's never done this. Yeah. Something had to happen. I get on the phone. Hey, honey, great game, great game. And this and that. She goes, hey, before you get out of the Milwaukee, will you get Robin Yao's autograph for him?
Get
because
out,
he owns you.
Oh, man.
Mom. She wanted me to get his autograph because he owns me.
What a mom.
Yeah.
I got
to love
that mom.
I said, are you serious you're calling? She goes, yeah, because I know if I didn't call, you wouldn't get it. But he's a good player.
Wow.
And he owned you.
It's crazy.
By the way, was she like that? Was she
oh,
get
yeah.
out the
– Oh, yeah.
But dig yeah,
in. I met her. We had to do a national deal for Mother's Day, and I had tried and get back at her a couple times.
By the way, I want to show you guys a guy, a first pitch. We haven't given him enough credit. So do you remember when you guys would do the Red River Classic?
Oh, gosh.
You know, I sponsored it. We were the main sponsor in 2019, and I was the first pitch. And mm-hmm. I want to brag about my first pitch, so I want
oh,
you to jump my
get
pitch.
Out of here.
Watch
no.
this. Yeah, you're there, by the way. Watch this here.
Oh,
go
yeah.
ahead.
How did
look
I not
this.
Know this?
This is how I get picked up.
Stop it, Pat.
Man, softball.
Dude, cancel the podcast right now.
With Toby and all of us
yeah,
there?
Yeah, of course. Had a good time with you
Pat,
guys.
What was going on there?
I don't know. Maybe we had like 50 people there from our guys. We our headquarters like 10 miles away. By the way, beautiful stadium.
Yeah, Frisco, man.
Yeah, we brought the kids. It was phenomenal. I love the city.
Just throwing ground.
I think I had McConaughey playing short, and he dives after both knees are bleeding after the first inning. I said, dude, this is a celebrity softball game. Yeah. You ain't got it. Yeah. I mean, he's laying out. And I got Marcus Luttrell there. I mean, and some guys are hitting
that's
bullets,
wild.
Man. They didn't realize
by
some
the way,
of these guys could
real,
hit.
It's a real, like, people show up. This yeah. is at the beginning of the game. By the end yeah. of it, there was people there, but people show up.
McConaughey was there?
Yeah, yeah all of them. There's yeah. a bunch of them. I'm probably you know, not even naming them correctly, but there's a bunch of guys that were there.
Roger, let me ask you. So,
who was the greatest the Oklahoma coach? What's his name? The coach of Oklahoma everybody brags about.
He Bob
was there. Switzer. Barry Switzer
oh,
was
Barry
there.
Switzer.
And,
yeah,
and Stoops.
Yeah.
Both of them were
both
there.
Them
were
oh,
both,
yeah.
both of them were
Bob,
there.
Shout out to Bob
yeah.
Stoops, guy.
Yeah.
You hear this. Roger, I want to ask you about like a pinch me moment. So, you know, you're throwing all these names out there.
Yeah.
So we're I don't know if you've got a major pinch me moment. For me, I interviewed Vince Vaughn one time randomly.
Oh,
like,
nice.
I love Vince Vaughn.
Oh,
are you freaking
on.
Kidding me?
So
you're
guy.
Throwing out names that you've met. You interviewed Michael Jordan. You're hanging out with Larry Bird, Yogi Berra, all names. What's your greatest pinch me moment that you're like, I can't believe this is
I love doing this with y'all right here. I mean, this is fun. And like I said, I should have kept a journal. My mom said to do it, but if I'd have kept one, I'd have probably been a 2-year player and out. Had nothing to – big in history. Obviously, being in Boston, I met the Kennedys and just so many cool guys. I mean, you know, they meet you like I tell guys, you know, they're like, hey, on the mound. I go, that's my job. I was brought up that way. I take it very seriously. Like I said, I changed, you know, when I did it, again, I jumping around here with these questions, but my sisters always remind me of the 2 days my mom sat at the kitchen table with her hand when our electricity got turned off. So come on, guys. So that's, again, that's why it chats me. You silver $1 million. No. Do your homework. Okay, I said, you know, it might have happened to some, for some, but, you know, I didn't have a car in high school. I ran with my backpack from my high school to our town home. And but to be able to meet some of these people and you know, they see you and they're, hey, man, you're funny. They see me DJing. I go, this stuff I love to do. I'm pitching. I love it. But, again, it was about, you know, about winning because I'm wearing a city on my chest. I want to perform. You guys come get a dog and take right from work, take, you know, get your beer and a dog. There's nothing worse than driving home after I've laid an egg. I get knocked out in the third inning. I hate it. But, again, like I told the guys the other day in the clubhouse, I won 200 games because I was on with my heater split. Slide, I was on. You had no chance. The games that I got out of second and third, bases loaded, and you know, my catchers are like, you know, after the game, like, I have no idea how we did that. you know, we won 5-4. But that's what they pay you to do. They pay you to pitch. I know going to the bar, when I wake up, I go through that's the it. Lineup, take my shower. I go through the lineup.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
You guys prepare. I mean, this is fun for me because you guys are bringing stuff on me that I forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it fun for me. Now, I wash my hair. I'm going through the lineup. I know when I get to the stadium in that game, I'm going to have second, third, and one out. Somewhere in that game, I'm going to have to get out of it to win the game. And so it's your mindset. I go through progressions. Like I said, physically, I got you. All the laps I ran on backfields that nobody saw. All the fielding, I told the guys again in the clubhouse, I'll tell you guys, I said, you know what your strengths are, you polish those, but you friggin' know what your weaknesses are. And just like in other games, I know what you do best, I'm gonna take that away from you at the plate immediately, especially when I pitch inside. I don't pitch inside to hit guys, I pitch inside to make a 17-inch plate, a 24-inch plate. I tell the pitchers that pitch inside late, it does nothing for you, they're gonna climb right back on the plate. I pitch in early, so when the guys are still dicking around on the bench, spitting sunflower seeds, the first, boom, strike.
Everybody talks about second, when they get in.
Second pitch, boom, inside, light him up a little bit. Everybody on the bench goes, oh shit, here we go, here we go. We got a game. So now you get guys' attention and you do your thing that way. But I've met so many cool people.
Your best Michael Jordan story? What's your best Michael Jordan story?
MJ gambles with a good friend of mine, and it's crazy. It's crazy what they do. He's super competitive. I got to go down and play Grove 23 a couple weeks ago. He was there. He kind of hit me from behind. And I actually, myself and Urlacher won his last year of his tournament at Shadow Creek. I think we beat what then was Bruce Jenner. and Penny Hardaway.
These are legends. But
Bruce and Penny.
Bruce slash Caitlin. She hits the ball far, and I just said, you know, if we play again and she's hitting from the ladies' tee, we got no chance because Caitlin's a good player too, and but anyway, nice guy and. But we got after him pretty good and won that tournament. And, but you know, just watching Michael play, I thought it was really cool when he was trying to play baseball. I think, you know, we were teasing him that somebody like that, you know, if they got close to facing one of us in the majors, whether it be a devastating breaking ball or a 95, you know, he got the double A and, we had a little thing says, he'd be writing home to mom, says, "Dear mom, just saw my first big league breaking ball. P.S. Be home soon."
Be home soon. Exactly.
But
did he have any chance of ever making it to the majors? It wasn't even close.
No, Tebow probably had maybe a little edge, just being a competitive athlete like he is. But it's a different deal, man. It'd be like, you know, trying to backpedal on a fast break with Michael coming at you. You got no chance.
Yeah.
And,
so when you hear LeBron saying, "I may play for the Cowboys," stuff like that, you think it's the same thing, or you think LeBron is a different thing? He could actually be a receiver.
No.
Yeah.
No,
okay. Same
guys,
thought. Yeah.
Those guys, even in college, when you're on the sidelines and you see a guy coming around and he's got 8 yards to get a first down, you see it, and the gap closes in 2 yards. I mean, it's crazy how. I mean, again, the biggest game we had this past year, Alabama came into Austin, and. First time I met Sark, I mean, he'd been the man, but it was really cool. He said hello to all of his coaches. And then he came down, he saw me, gave me a hug. He's a huge Red Sox guy.
Mm.
And to see
– I guess the question would be the following. So what do you say about guys like Brian Jordan, Deion, Bo, those three guys? Because they played.
They played. It'd be like – you know, it'd be like the guys that are trying to go on the buy.com tour and golf too. I mean, it's a different level. I played with – guys are in the top 10 at the time, in the 80s and 90s even. And there's a difference between the 11th ranked player in the world and the top five. Mm-hmm. There's a difference in the, in what they're doing. Now, it might be the mental part of it, like I was alluding to earlier. Physically, I got you. You know, I'm on a backfield. I know my fielding isn't great, but I got guys hitting me fungos while everybody else is leaving the stadium, and I'm taking 75 comebackers and throwing them and whistling to third, doing whatever, and then I become an above-average fielder. So when we get to playoff time, somebody's going to lay down a bunt in a crucial spot. I got to get my ass on it and get the guy at third. I'm ready for that. And the second phase is the mental part of the game, which I think is the biggest thing. Mentally, I'm fucking going to kill you. I got you. Okay.
You yeah. believe that and yeah. you know that.
100%. 100%. If you make eye contact, I want you to make eye contact with me coming to play. But that's just the old school guys, you know, where I learned, like I said, the Drysdale interview.
What does the eye contact do to the hitter?
Well, I'm just eyeballing him just a little bit and just trying to stay locked in, really. And then after that, once he stands in a box, I don't care if it's a rookie or Albert Pujols, I'm not really I know where your hot spots are, but I'm not. You know, I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then emotions come into play. Now, in 24 years, I showed my backside a few times, but I care. That's what I said. You know, I got that from my mom, my grandma. I care about my work. You know, everybody started doing this with their gloves, right, where they're hiding it. Sometimes I got in a little argument with a couple guys and what's my t-shirt say? I love Jesus, but I do swear a little. So I would put my glove up to hide that. But that was because of my mom. Like, we were on national TV, and I got into a little swearing contest with some guy. And after the game, mom called again. She says, honey, your brothers and sisters are watching. Can you put your glove up in front of your face? So I think that's where it all started coming from. And
it's good that she's not saying don't do it. Yeah, she's saying just cover it up.
Just cover it up. Yeah. So she was, I mean, I had to pitch the night we lost her. I was in Austin. She passed away in Austin, and I had to pitch that night, and I knew she would want me to pitch. Tribute to mom. Her favorite movie was Field of Dreams. So when I went to Louisville Slugger, I was able to obtain a Shoeless Joe bat from that movie. And that was pretty cool. I mean, it was part of it. But anyway, that's the transitions I go through. And emotions, I'll play on emotions. Grandma being sick, mom passing, to try and elevate my game a little bit.
Whose favorite movie was Field of Dreams? It was your mom?
My mom, yeah.
I got to tell you, I love Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner, and all those movies. It was even Robin Hood back in the day, Dances with Wolves. But if you don't cry when, at the end of the movie, he plays catch with his dad,
yeah,
who comes back to life, I mean, like, big you've time. Got nothing left. Like,
big time.
By the way, best baseball movies ever. What do you? I mean, you got Major League, you got The Sandlot, you've got Field of Dreams. The Natural, Moneyball, even. I know you've interviewed Billy Bean multiple times.
I love Moneyball.
42 recently, Jackie Robinson.
What was it, Major League? What was the best line? I'm trying to think because now they're running together. But Robert Wall, who Robert considers him. I did
who
one
was the agent, right?
He's my Hollywood agent. So I was on Arliss like three times. Arliss was my guy for I played like a old Christy Mathison 1916 Philadelphia A's, whatever it was, but Robert was in there with me, and it was the only baseball scene with Tommy Lee Jones called Cobb.
Yeah.
And kind of dark, but it was the only baseball season. But what was it? We're talking about the movie. So it's a shower scene. The manager is screaming at the guys, get everybody in the shower. You got a minute to get in there, and they're counting. And they were all in the shower. Robert's there as the pitching coach, and the manager's airing their ass out. And he goes, "So, whatever his name was, the pitching coach, he goes, so-and-so, what's our record? He goes to the manager. He goes, 8-16, coach. He goes, 8-16. He goes, how the hell did we win 8 games?
Major League.
Yeah, Major League. I think it's so that was
pretty, that coach, that, by the way, where he's just like, every time I come in here, you're bitching about something. Yeah. It's an arm thing or it's a leg thing.
It's got to be.
Well, that's where I got my jersey, Lollygaggers.
Yeah, lollygagging in the infield.
That's where I got it.
Lollygagging in the infield.
I love
that coach.
I have a jersey when I DJ sometimes, lollygagging.
So is that your favorite? Would you say that's it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's some good ones. Yeah.
I got a couple other questions here for you.
They're filming that in Milwaukee, by the way.
The one on the top right?
Supposed to look like Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Pretty sure
they did that in Milwaukee County Stadium.
Speaking of Milwaukee, just late breaking news. Robin Yount is on the phone here. Oh. He wants to have a conversation with you. Yeah.
But you know, you said something. You said when you're up there, you know, physically I got you. Mentally I'm locked in. Just make eye contact. I got it. Then it's emotional, like those three. Sometimes my back... Got it. All that stuff you're talking about, physical, mental, emotional, fine. Derek Jeter said something. He says Roger Clemens is in another world when he's pitching. He's there, but he's not there. What does he mean by that?
Derek has to holler at me twice to step off the mound. You know, when there's something going on, he has to get my attention twice. DJ, playing with DJ, I mean, obviously everybody knows. He's probably a better person than he is baseball player, and that's saying a lot. And teammate. One of the best. I think that when I competed against him, he knew he was going to get my best at that time. And then he found out when we became teammates. They played a little joke on me when I came over. My first live BP in Tampa at the stadium, I think it was Jeet, Knobloch, and Tino, and they all climbed in the cage with full catcher's gear on. Because Jeet said, you hit me all the time. I said, you crowd the plate, your hands are over. I said, most of the time I hit you, it was a strike. You know, so we went at it that way. But
I guess, have you seen the movie Legends of Bagger Vance?
I have.
Okay, so you know how he says, you know, like, there's a scene where everybody's around, he's about to hit the shot, and Will is trying to get him to say the audience disappears. Did you really get to a point where the audience disappeared or no?
I tell this all the time, Pat. You hit it right on the head. I think it's the same scene where the fairway looks like it just
exactly.
opens up.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what that's where you get to. The young pitching coach of the Phillies, we just talked the other day, and he was taking notes, and I got on some stuff that nobody would think about. Like at Fenway Park and at Yankee Stadium, I had the ground crew mow their last mow job right down Broadway. And the mower is about the width of a pitcher's rubber. And so when I'm standing on the mound, it's like a bowler. I have a lane where I'm going to. And if I keep missing a ball or two off here, some of these guys start jacking with their arm angle. All you got to do is move over 1 inch. It's like if I'm hitting a slice and I'm out there gambling against you, and I'm going to go to the right side of the tee box, and I'm going to hit that. I'll fix it on the range in an hour. Mm. Instead of next thing you know, I owe you a grand at the end of the round, you know? So that's the same thing with that. Sometimes the turf has the seam that you know, is going right down Broadway. So it's just a great vision thing. So now you're not thinking about, oh, am I going to do good or bad against it? You're locked in on what you're doing.
But how do you get there, though? Okay, so for example, like, you know,
the good ones can do it, man.
I know that, but there's a routine, like, you know, you're a public speaker, first time you speak, you're scared shitless. You're like, oh, my God, what if I scroll out of your breathing? So how do you control that? All of a sudden, do you look at them? Do you not make eye contact? You shouldn't just look at somebody else, act like you're looking, but you're not. So, you know,
But after the 2 minutes, you're rolling.
No question about it. But a great speaker, when he's going up there, he has a routine. He's telling himself something, right? You're about to go to the mound. What are you telling yourself? Are you telling yourself, are you listening? Like when I had Kobe talked about how he's listening to certain music, song, you know, Friday the 13th, he would listen to that song to get himself. He had a psychological where he would get into the zone. Was there a routine? Was there a song? Was there a book? Was there a quote? Was there an affirmation? Were you telling yourself something? You got this, Roger. Just remember when you were 14. It's the love of the game. What are you feeding yourself before you go up there?
What they say about your pressure, you know, will find your weaknesses, okay? And that's why we practice perfect. That's why my bullpen sessions are locked in, intense. Like I'm doing a 12-minute bullpen in between, and I'm going to be starting game 3. Or it might be a Wednesday afternoon business special.
Yeah.
It might be as simple as that, not what you wouldn't consider a big game. I'm doing this, and I got guys moving over here, or the lawn guy, or the guy doing this, or I got somebody talking. No. Stop. Because I want to be right here. My first 3 starts in spring training where you're going 1-2 innings, I can hear the popcorn vendor. I can see guys moving in the dugout. I can hear my sister or something yelling for me. By my last 2 starts of spring training, it's just like that movie. I don't hear anything. I see the catcher, and it's a game within a game. I've had, like I said, some wonderful catchers in my career, and I'll call them out sometimes. Some of my catchers like to move a little bit more and catch balls on their breastbone. And I tell him, I have to call him out, and I go, sit your ass still. You're moving. Am I moving, Rock? Yeah, you're moving too much. Because most umpires, when they get down, they put their hand on the catcher. And if he, I got, if I'm painting a pitcher,
yeah,
and it's just, and he goes, it's a ball. So I want you to sit still, trust your hands. I'm going to get it to you. A professional player, really a double-A player onto the big league guy, if you're catching me and you're asking for a ball, and I should be able to get the ball within a ball and a half to where you want it and not make those one or two mistakes, you know. Solo home runs are good, three-run homers. I had a pitching coach, Bill Fisher, who's passed, went and spoke at his funeral in Council Bluffs. To this day, he still holds a record for 91 innings without walking a guy. So his biggest deal with me, when I struck out 20 and set the major league record, I didn't even know there was a strikeout record. I was just going through that game. Almost missed the game. There's a story behind that. Almost missed the damn game and got scratched. Punch out 20. He comes over. Everybody's gone. My wife's waiting in the park, and I just got done icing, get my street clothes on. And he called me Smokey after Smokey Joe Wood. He was old school. Fish was. He had Tom Seaver. That was the reason why Tom was with us. He had Seaver when he was with the Reds. Fish says, Smokey, he goes, two things. He goes, and I didn't know at the time. He said, congratulations on the record. You know, you beat these three guys. They had 19. You did 20, blah, blah, blah. He said, really proud of you throwing that rate of speed. He goes, but guess what? He goes, you didn't walk a single batter. And I go, that's pretty cool, Fish. Coming from you, that means a lot for you. So he took two steps, turns back around. Because I almost missed the game. I got stuck in traffic and was late.
Crazy.
And it was bad. I mean, I felt like a rookie going through the clubhouse door. Everybody's looking at me like, are you nuts? So he stepped back.
Traffic.
He walked away.
It's not an excuse.
Well, I know it's not. The Celtics were playing a playoff game, and there was a concert going on. I was getting ready to run to the stadium, but I'll finish. He takes two steps because I almost missed the game. He takes two steps away from comes back. And he goes, Smokey, another thing. He goes, you get to the damn ballpark anytime you want. And I go, Fish, I will never be – that was embarrassing. I said it was – I mean, I was sitting, and I could see the Citgo sign. I was a mile away, had my boots and jeans on, a golf shirt. Wife's with him. We just had the one car. We're living in apartments, you know. Stuck in traffic and panic and starting to sweat a little bit. You know, this game started at 7:35 back then. It's like 6:50.
Huh.
And so I get out. I pop trunk. I say, slide over. I'm going to take my boots off, put my running shoes on. I'm going to run.
How far are you from
It's a mile. Point? It's a mile. I'm going to run to the stadium from here because we're moving a car length.
Is that Roger Clemens running by my car? Right
Did you literally run?
No, I got in, started putting my things on my trunk. So the motorcycle police officer comes in. Thinks I'm broke down. Woo, 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 hits this thing. I turn. He looks at me. He goes, holy shit. You know,
Rocket.
He goes, hey, aren't you on the – I go, yeah, I'm supposed
I'm pitching tonight. I'm pitching tonight, buddy.
He parks.
That is so cool.
He hits his horn.
So you got to get it, Roger. You got to get yeah. baked.
No, no.
You got to win.
Hey, Pat, he parted the
that
sea.
That is so cool.
He parted the sea. I jumped out in the parking lot. I ran in the locker room.
God.
It's like 7:10. They've already got a long man in the bullpen ready to go. Fish, my pitching coach, goes in the manager's office. Fixing to get my ass chewed out. Sit down there, and McNamara's the manager. Mac said, we're scratching you. You're going to – now, I got to talk to the media about this, and there ain't no way. I said, bullshit, I'm getting dressed. I didn't take a no for an answer. I run out, dress in a phone booth. My pitching coach is 60. He's never run – you know, Fenway Park, the home to the bullpen, it's a pretty good ways. I thought he was going to pass out. We sprint. I get out there. I'm warming up. I don't even throw a strike. I'm bouncing the ball. He's on the phone. He's talking to
–
he's like, leave the long man out there. He ain't getting out of the first inning. He's all over the pit. I mean, I'm hitting I look like
– That some of those, is insane.
You look like PVD when he's throwing a first
his
pitch.
His is pretty good. It's a softball. I look like the
50
other guy.
50 Cent out there.
Only peace and quiet I get is the anthem, finally. I got the worst tempo out of my shoelace untied, bend over. I mean, I remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought my tempo was going to fall out, and I'm like
– Here we go.
I get out there. Friggin' rest is I punch out 20 and I don't
that was
walk.
That same game.
That's the game he's talking about.
I punch out 20.
How do you lock in though? How do you lock in?
It just started going and that's why I told you I was icing. Fish said you get to the damn ballpark anytime you want.
Yeah, that's
I was
great. Like, so no song. You don't have a song before. You don't have any of that stuff.
Man,
that
I played late in my career. You know, Toby Keith's a good friend. So I play not as good as you once was, but good once than you ever was.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to my man Toby. He's been battling. And Man, I did Linkin Park for those guys. You know, it's different guys I meet, and you know, I did some stuff with Nickelback. So
Nickelback,
just, you know, cool. I just kind of, you know, I got friends. Like I said, the other sports, I watch guys. You know, I watch guys in football that I root for and that I met that are really cool guys. And again, it's kind of wild. You meet them off the field and you see them for the first time, and then you see what they do. So it's cool. But I'm that way with like sitting right here with you guys. I mean, this is cool. I mean, I think it's, you know, I see the pictures in the studio and what you guys do. And my two younger ones are business oriented big time. So they're into it. And not that my two older ones aren't, they've got their priorities too. So,
I want to show you this. Like, I want you to see this. Like, would you have ever had a walkout like this? Now, obviously, you're not a relief pitcher, but when you see this here, and this video goes viral on Twitter, gets 11 million views, I wonder what you think about this. Press play. I want the energy. I want all of it. I mean, just the intensity of it. Have you seen this before, Roger, or no? Press play.
And now Timmy Trumpet takes center stage as Edwin Diaz gets ready to come in.
Tell me you've seen this before. Watch this. The best walkout right now. The music, the build-up. Adam, have you seen this? Oh my gosh, you're about to flip out. Look at this. Look at the energy in the place. Oh my God. Ready? Here we go.
Timmy Trumpet.
Woo! That's intense.
Now, what makes it worth it is you got to get the save.
That's right.
You got to get the save. I'm the starting pitcher right now, icing upstairs right now, and I'm watching all this. I'm saying it's all great, but let's get a couple out. So I'm just going to tell you right now, that's cool. And all these closers got it from the king, Mariano Rivera. When Mo comes in, he's probably got the coolest jog ever coming in from the bullpen at Yankee Stadium. Find one of those. Mo will have his glove in his throwing hand, and all you see is that 42 coming out of the bullpen.
Rivera, greatest closer ever, no doubt.
By the way,
where did he get it from?
He
got it from Ricky Vaughn, the Wild Thing, Major League.
Ricky Vaughn didn't have that cutter.
Ricky Vaughn, early in his career, looked like some of these guys throwing out that first pitch.
Mo's got him a song, too.
Press the song. Let's hear it. What is it?
He usually puts his glove in his right hand.
Okay, interesting.
Enter
you
got to
turn it off. You're not going to like it.
Enter Sandman.
Gotta love that.
Look at it.
Yeah,
I tell people there's two things for sure in life, but there's really three: death, taxes, Mariano Rivera.
he's gonna close out
like that.
It's insane.
By the way, earlier you talked about catcher, pitcher. How much of the experts, like the guys, once you're like the best pitcher in the league, you, Randy, you know, you got
Maddox,
Nolan, Maddox, you know, Kershaw, all these guys. How much of it is you leading the catcher? How much of it is the catcher leading you? Or does it change based on the experience of the catcher? I know you said I would have loved to have Johnny Bench or Yogi and all those guys. I totally get that. But are you directing the catcher, or is the catcher directing you? I guess the what I would want to know is the split. Like, I'm sure you're going to say there's part that you are, part that he is. But is it 60 catcher, 40 you? Is it 80 you, 20 catcher? What is that relationship with the catcher and the pitcher?
80-20.
80 you.
80-20.
80 you, 20 catcher.
But that 80, amongst that 80, that catcher knows that 80. They
wow,
know
80
me.
Is you?
Yeah, yeah.
And is that common with all the pitchers, or that's you?
I called 95% of my game from the mound.
Get out
And that
of
was
here.
Before. Now they got Get the watches and stuff.
95%?
Scherzer the other day had his on, and you noticed he was calling his. He wasn't waiting for the catcher to call it. He was calling it from his wrist. He had one on. I don't know if he's going to pitch with that on. But mine was all done with looks. I mean, and like I said, I had to be careful if a guy got traded because they knew a little bit about him. Plus, I would tell Jeet or and Adam Everett, who I was with the other day, that I'm fixing to induce a ball coming to you, so heads up. Now, Jeet would sneak up the middle a little bit towards second because, as you notice, he had a great backhand. He had that famous jump throw that he looked really – I mean, that was his patented, you know, his deal. And but the catcher's super important. But Jorge would catch Mariano, and everybody knew, especially if you're lefty, he's throwing that cutter. Mo would break one or two bats every outing, you know, closing the game. And he would throw that cutter. So the hitters, you'd see the hitters sneak off just a little bit when you didn't think he was looking. Posada would do his – and he would just follow him in further. And
so you're game, giving credit there to Posada for understanding that part.
You won two World Series with the Yankees. Is that what it was?
Yes.
With that team nucleus right there.
We had an all-star at every position.
Yeah.
Great manager, Joe Torre. Great bench coach and Don Zimmer. Had Zim in Boston.
Don Zimmer.
Zim was, I mean, baseball lifer.
Did he get into it with Pedro? Yeah. Was that
he grabbed
by the face?
Like a matador. Like
unbelievable.
Pedro kind of gave me the matador, but it was I was on the mound and he was getting crazy. And they knew on the other side somebody was going to eat one eventually. And I just threw a high fastball to Manny. It was a strike these days, I think. And all hell broke loose. But, yeah, we saw this ball-headed guy go flying. We thought it was David
Wells.
That's
the one right there. That's the one. Go back.
This is a strike.
Veritech?
Look, watch this.
This is a strike.
That's a strike.
I don't know about that, Raj.
Look, he's not. Look where this
strike.
Look, come on. It's not even. It's over the inside corner. Come on.
Okay.
These days they call the high strike.
That's Manny?
Now, that is hilarious.
But I think Zim goes flying over here. There he goes. Yeah. Zim was hot.
Classic.
So Zim, oh, my God.
You know,
Pedro.
Zim's 70. I go, what are you doing, Zim? Jesus. Breathing, we pick
by
him up
by the way, what's opposite about this, go to the other clip that I sent you, the one with – I just texted you which one I'm talking about. I want to see his reaction to this with the audio because the look is the one I'm interested in to see what you say about this. So let's see if you find it. No. I sent it to you earlier. You should have it. You should have it somewhere here. If not, I can resend it to you, but I texted it to you. If you look at the text, just go to text. It's the second one I sent you. Right there. Right there. Go to that one. All right, so this is you against Estes.
I'm getting ready.
You remember this.
Yeah, I'm trying to go deep.
Watch this. I'm actually curious to know what you're going to say about this one here, like what you were thinking. He was actually trying to hit you.
I don't know how he missed my big ass.
This is you at bat, Roger.
Watch this. They know it's coming.
Here's the first pitch. Fastball, it hits him. He threw it behind him, and the warning goes out. It didn't hit him, I don't think. It went behind him.
I like what the guy says at the end. He's upset that he didn't hit him. Because he was trying to hit him.
Away, but it didn't hit him. He's still
yeah,
the
I think the
Wally Bell is saying something to
we had a couple other their players.
And looked out at Estes, did not make any move. And Mike Piazza.
Well, you see, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, you know, Estes has to be disappointed in that result. He was obviously trying to hit him, and he missed him.
I'm 6'4", 240. How do you miss me at that time?
So what's the?
I tried to stick my boot. Yeah.
So what are you thinking there when that happens? It's kind of like the tables have turned. Yeah, yeah. Now you're on the other side.
Yeah, but I play. It's like in the National League, the guys would say, I think the 3 years I was in the National League, and they're like, okay, because he has to hit two and you know, you have to go to the plate. It's almost better because when you get in a game that you have to clean up a game because they've thrown at one of your guys and you got to clean it up down the road. It's even better in the National League because now instead of throwing at one of my teammates, they can hit me. So if you're going to hit me, hopefully you put me out of the game because if not, then I got the magic bullet again. So that's the ugly part of the game, but it's the old school part of the game. When I have a teammate that comes, they really don't sit next to me on the bench or come down the tunnel. But when they do, I tell them, hey, you know, what's up? I say, you got a problem with this guy? And some very famous players go, I got a problem with this guy, Rock. He freaking hits me. I go, we'll take care of it later. So if it presents itself, you clean the game up. There's been times where my teammates, pitchers, were supposed to clean up a game, and then it fell to my game. So I got to be the shitty one, you know. But that's you get respect from your teammates.
Interesting
and,
what you just
and,
said. Yeah.
And you know, like I said, I'm with those 25 guys.
Did you hit him back or no?
No. He missed me, and then they said, that's it. You had your chance. One of their who am I thinking of? Gosh, who was the guy that's in the bullpen for them? I played golf with the guy. He brought it up. He's like, no, you had your chance. You missed him, so that was it. So I actually got a little bit closer to the plate. I think my knees are in the strike zone, and I thought he was going to throw maybe away, but he threw it right in there, strike three. I thought it was
Roger. I was watching a clip with what's his name, Stephen A. Smith, and he's talking about how the hell do certain people not belong in the Hall of Fame? We have to ask the question because you can't do this without having a conversation about that and the controversy of it. I don't know how many rookie cards of yours I own. I think I own 60 Barry Bonds PSA 10 rookie cards, right? I own, some of the bigger Ted Williams card, Yogi Berra, you know, all those guys, and Babe Ruth, PSA 8, 1933, Gowdy's like $1 million card. I own a lot of these baseball cards. I love baseball cards. But there's certain guys you're like, dude, I mean, this last Hall of Fame, you got what, 65.2, I think, was a number, some number like that. You need to be at 75, with that. And you've commented, you said something very important, I think it was like 10 years ago, where you said, in our family, we're not even looking at the whole concept with Hall of Fame anymore. Yeah. It's not, first half of my career was about, generational wealth. I've done that. My family's taking care of. Second half, I wanted to win. You did that. Great. You're a champion. Your numbers are incredible. And there's a lot more people who are critics and not even fans of yours that would say, this guy belongs in a Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts? You've spoken about this, probably not something you like talking about regularly, but what are your thoughts about this whole, there's plenty of these guys that we feel belongs there. What do you have to say about what they're doing right now?
Yeah, well, you said it, Pat. I mean, after year one, when it became political, we quit worrying about it each year that comes. Writers would call or people would call to say, hey, can I do an interview in this? I go, guys, I've already made my blanket statement. There's nothing really to add. I have zero control over that. And like you said, I probably get more all my public appearances. I probably get more people that wish me and say you shouldn't. The only answer you can say is thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because they look. Bottom line, they looked at the facts, and we did it. We went about it the right way. What we did was we stopped not one now that I know of, but since three people from making money off our last name, and trying to sell themselves on that fact. And so, I can tell you when I General Myers, all the guys when I did this, they called me after all the Congress stuff and said, "Hey, I had to sit in that same seat. It's not comfortable. They were going to try and trick you. There was no facts. They had some guy reading a doctor's report that the doctor never even saw me. I mean, it was almost like a trap because of what they were doing. I think the guy, Wax, I called him Waxhead. He was up there sitting on a stack of phone books, just trying to preach to you and let you get your story out and what things that meant to you, whether my dad, the health risk of it, when I got family heart issues in our family and stuff I need to write about it one time because I want it to be I told the family, I want it to be a great book and I want to give credit where credit's due, but I'm going to cut some guys off at the knees too about some stuff that's never really been out there. Or like I told people, if you can read past the third grade, you would have known what was going on. And I said, I like Jerry Springer and I like watching this show, but it turned into a straight Jerry Springer show. But again, President Bush called me. The support that I had from people that know us and know us as people, that's the way it is. But the Hall of Fame's not going to change who I am as a person. I tell people that's what I did for a living. It's not who I am as a person, but I took it very seriously. But it's not going to change. In the hall is not going to change it.
Are you an NFL guy or no? Did you follow the NFL? Do you follow the product NFL or not really?
I root for the guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember Sterling Sharp? Mm-mm. Remember Sterling Sharp? Shannon Sharp's brother?
No, I know both of them. One of them golfs a little more. Who's on TV now?
Shannon right now is on TV.
Shannon, so it's Sterling. Sterling's the golfer. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see? I hope I got to try to find this man. Did you see the speech Shannon gave at his Hall of Fame speech, and how he brought in his brother and what he said about Sterling Sharp? Oh, brother! I mean, I'm at a. Okay, oh, thank God I found it. Okay, I want you to see this. And the reason why I want you to see this, I have a couple different things where I would go. For me, just play this first, and then I'll give my thoughts. I want to kind of get your commentary and thoughts on this because, you know, what you've done with your 24-year career of staying in the league, that is not easy to do. But play this clip, and then it's a TikTok clip. It's not even a it's very emotional. Very emotional. On the angle he takes, I had no idea where he was going. If you can turn
it's
it on.
It's his brother.
This is
older. Right.
Rewind.
Is he older than?
No, Sterling is the older brother.
Yes.
Okay,
I'm
so
the
watch
only player
this. Pray, go ahead.
Of 267 men that's walked through this building to my left, that can honestly say this. I'm the only pro football player that's in the Hall of Fame, and I'm the second best player in my own family.
Watch this. Very emotional, guys. Watch. This is nothing. You have to hear what it says next.
If fate had dealt you a different hand, there's no question. There's absolutely no question in my mind. We would have been the first brothers to be elected to the Hall of Fame. The 44 men and women that I thanked and congratulated early for giving me and bestowing this prestigious honor upon me, all I do is ask. All I can do is ask in the most humblest way I know how, is that the next time you go into that room or you start making a list, look at Sterling Sharpe's accomplishments for a 7-year period of the guys that's in the Hall of Fame at the receiver position and the guys that have the potential to be in this building. That's all I ask. I don't say, hey, just do that. The next time you go in that room, think about Sterling Sharpe's number for 7 years. That's all I ask.
See what he's doing? Managing expectations. So for me, here's how I see this. We had Curt Schilling here 2 months ago. Okay, you're seeing him give this speech. If you watch the whole speech when he gives, and you're seeing Sterling is just like, you know, the Terrell Davis one time was crying, and the Broncos were playing like 13 years ago, and his tears were dropping. Do you remember the running back?
Yeah, of course.
And you're like, I've never seen anybody cry like this before, and they're in the Super Bowl. It's an emotional moment. Somebody in freaking baseball, Hall of Fame, needs to give a speech like this and say, There's a bunch of guys. Now, you hear the criticism saying, you know, the Major League Baseball doesn't allow Republicans in the Hall of Fame because it's become political and you can't make comments like that or this and this and that. Hey, you went to a Trump rally. How dare you go to a Trump rally and you're doing this and you're doing that. Curt Schilling, you've been saying all this stuff. There's a list of names that you can talk about. The Bagwells, the Reigns, the Hoffman, the Schilling, the Bonds, the Martinez, Mussina, Trammell, Smith, McGriff, Kent, Walker, McGuire, Sheffield, Wagner, Sosa. There's a lot of names, right? These are guys that crushed it. I wasn't the Army. 1998, and Major League Baseball had just come off the their strike. I think they had whatever the year was, 96 or 94, 97. 94. I don't know what the year was. Nobody was watching baseball. Nobody was interested in the product. It was boring. It was dying. Stadiums were empty. Then all of a sudden, these two guys come up, and one's name is Mark McGuire. The other guy's name is Sammy Sosa. Mm-hmm. And every night when we would come back to the barracks, dude, we would stay up till God knows what. We just wanted to see it was like, what a freaking, you know, rock and roll. They revived. Baseball owes Sammy and Mark McGuire billions of dollars. MLB, you owe those two guys revived the flipping game. So here's where I take it. I watch football. And I look at some of these guys, what they look like. You know, I'm a guy that's tried Primo Ballin. I did the TRT for like 5 or 6 weeks. and clenbuterol, some of this stuff that, you know, because I wanted to be a bodybuilder, and you kind of like, shit, I got to get into this. And you really find out what the bodybuilders are. You're like, oh, shit, I can't do all that stuff. But TRT, you know, you got these HGH, some of the stuff that Hollywood's doing it. Football, they don't really get tested as much as some of the other leagues. Yeah. These guys playing football. By the way, if you're not on something and you're getting hit by 350, I'm worried about your neck. I'm worried about your body. I'm worried about what you're doing. So to me, it's not even about the conversation about that. There are guys that gave their lives to this game, that entertained the hell out of fans like myself and increased the product of MLB that belonged there. But I feel like some of the existing guys are playing politics, and some of them need to grab their you-know-what and make a speech and say, hey, man, when are we going to do make an exception for these guys to get in? I played against these guys. So I know you can't say anything about it yourself because you've already gave your message, and I'm not looking for you to have a reaction to it. All I'm saying is this is my opinion. These are my thoughts. I think the game, if we were to look at baseball in a 20-year period and we said, okay, during that 20-year period, no problem. Take Maguire out. Take Sosa out. Take Bonds out. Take Clemens out. Take these guys out. What the hell is baseball? Take those products out. Who the hell is coming to watch the game? Who's trying to see the temperament, the mindset, the travel, the sacrifice, the 9 months out of the year? You're on the road. You're having kids. You're going through all this stuff. Take all that stuff out. Nobody's coming to watch the commissioner play. They're coming to watch you play, right? Michael made a comment about this in the Last Dance when they were talking about, you know, they don't come to watch the GM play. They don't come to watch the owner play. They come to watch us play. Right, he gave a representation for the guys, and Michael wasn't a guy that made a lot of money at the NBA. When, as in his contract, yes, last year he made $33 million or whatever the number is, but he was never the highest paid guy. He set the tone for everybody else afterwards.
Absolutely.
But it was also getting some perspective to say these writers are voting you in. Who the hell are you to vote a player in, and you ain't played? Well, what opinion? Yeah. So to me, it's a little bit confusing. I watch what they say, the speeches. This guy's not in. He doesn't deserve this. He doesn't deserve that. Hey, writers, you don't have a job without these players. If these guys weren't playing, putting their bodies through what they're putting through, you don't have anybody to talk about. You have a job because they play. So, anyways, that's my rant, not your rant. Hey, Pat, this is where I'm at with it.
I appreciate your passion. I can hear it in your voice. Excuse me. You know, like Greg Maddux told me, he was voting for me. Mad Dog knows me as a person and knows the person. And I said, I appreciate your vote, Doggy, but again, it's not going to change me as a person either way. I heard what I heard from you, entertainment. I know we're entertainers, but this was still my, like you alluded to earlier, my first couple of years of change of generational difference for my family. You know, pay off my mom's bills, you know, get her a car, da da da. And then it was about winning championships. The guys that know me, you know, I hear some asinine comments from guys that have no clue. Like I said, if you could read past the third grade, you would understand what went down and how it went down. I'm never going to play the victim, but I am going to stop people from using my name and spreading lies about me when they say it. I do that when people shit on one of my teammates and said, hold up, you got him on a bad day. See, I could be, you know, signing autographs. I signed 50, the 51st person, I'm an ass. Mm-hmm. And so you can't please everybody all the time.
So true.
I'm not going to come off phony because I'm trying to get you to like me. And, you know, this is who I am. This is how I was brought up. And I let the people, you know, like I said, I did some inner city work in Baltimore. This Baltimore congressman made a couple. He made them after I was in his office, took 25 photos with his staff and interns, signed all these autographs, and he was one that brought up you, Silver Spoon athlete. I go, hold up a second. You know, I gave him the quick rundown, very stern about my background. I said, you're reading a piece of paper. You're coming out here in front of the world, and you're getting stats on me 5 minutes from an intern. And that's what you go off of. You didn't take the time to learn about me, who I am as a person, where I came from, or what this might be, or you got some other dude spreading lies just because he's trying to get my pocket. So that's what I should have done when I went college. I should have just got my wallet and laid it on the table. I mean, that's all it was about. So I have some great friends like Reggie Jackson that are in the hall, and they say stuff all the time. Again, I don't think it makes you for me personally, I don't think it makes you hit a ball further. I don't think it makes you throw strikes being a control pitcher. I think it breaks you down and hurts you. A lot of these guys, I think it broke them down a little bit. But, you know, like I said, I'm not going to get bitter over it. We just quit worrying about it to come up day after day after day. And like you said, I remember calling Jim Rice, my former Red Sox, and Jimmy got in on his 10th try. So you either have the numbers to get in or you don't. They made him wait 10 years because he pissed off a lot of reporters. I called him and said, hey, Jim Ed, I said, congratulations and everything. I said, but let me ask you, how'd you get better in 10 years? Did you go play semi-pro ball and hit another 100 homers? Did you? I didn't see it or read about it. But so, you know, so you're either in the first one or you're not.
So and I appreciate your perspective because you're the player. But I give you the perspective from the player's perspective.
I totally hear it.
The fan's perspective, I'm a voter. You know, we're voters. We're not, dude, we don't do what you guys. I'm a business guy. I run businesses. I've busted my ass the last 20, having many years in insurance. I've done very well for myself, and now we're building a media company. But from the fan's perspective, when you're dealing with a million things in your life, dad's not healthy. This guy's going through this. That guy's going through this. You're having girlfriend problems. You're having kid problems. You're having this. You just want to sit there and just watch a damn game and have everything you were stressed out about be gone. Fans are voting for you guys, bro. So it's a different perspective for us than it is for you when you're like, hey, what else can I do? I've done my part. I get it. But a fan is like, no, I followed this guy for this many years. That guy needs to be in. So it's a different perspective. I get that, Ben. And I appreciate you sharing that. One last question I got for you. It's going to be like, why are you asking this question as a last thing? It's just for my own shits and giggles because I freaking follow this game. Hank Aaron said something one time about the whole, you know, the whole you guys got the Cy Young, you shouldn't be the MVP when you won the MVP. And he says, look, you know, pitchers have their own deal, Cy Young. We have MVP. I'm not changing my position. They shouldn't have given him the Cy Young and the MVP at the same time. You come back and you said, I have the quote somewhere here where you said, hey, I'd love for him to come here. I wish he were still playing. I'd probably crack his head open to show him how valuable I was, right? That's kind of like what you said.
That was the Young Rocket.
Young Rocket.
But this is to Hank Aaron. Hammer and Hank.
Well, it'd be like Pedro saying, wake up Babe Ruth, I'm going to hit him in the ass,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, let me quick story. Yeah. So, my oldest son is Kobe Aaron Clemens. He's named Aaron. His middle name's after Hank Aaron. So, that tells you all you need to know about the Young and Piss and Vinegar Rocket. Big respect for that. Of course, I thought your last question was going to be about DJ No Request and what my favorite songs are. Let me just tell you if we got time how you put things in perspective, and it goes along with that MVP award. So I win the MVP in the Cy Young, my first. I'm a Red Sox. I got to go to New York City. We call this the butter story. Everybody loves it, and it's true. Go to New York, pretty green. I got DiMaggio, Mantle, Ted Williams. I'm looking around as a who. Now, Donnie Mattingly's there. I'm the one that, you know, Donnie finished second in the MVP.
Not baseball.
Now, this little suit, we're at the top table and you're getting a cold piece of chicken, uncooked piece of steak, a little bitty baked potato, and a dinner roll. And the dude comes by, straight Yankee fan. He's looking at me like, and the look he gave me, I was like, okay, he spit in my food. There's no way I'm eating it. But I'm going to work on this dinner roll and maybe this baked potato. No. But he throws me a little cube of butter on the thing. And, you know, mustache, strip. His name's got to be Tony, for sure. You know, like, walks by, doesn't. I get through that dinner, right? I only got one cube of butter. I needed one more, but what the hell. First year up there. Fast forward. I win my second Cy Young back-to-back. Back in the penguin suit. Here we go. Now I'm popping my feeling good. I'm on Ted. How you doing? Mick, how you doing? Hey, Rocky. Yeah, I'm feeling it. Talking away. Here comes the bullshit thing. Same guy. Same freaking
Tony again.
Tony Super Mario. Looks like Super Mario brother. He goes by me and I'm like, hold on, guys. Hey, I said, hold up, man. Hold up a minute. He just gave me one. I need another cube of butter. That's all I'm looking for my baked potato. You know, just come on. So I'm talking, I see him come out, my guy, and here he comes again. I said, dude, stop. I said, I've been trying to get you for 10 minutes. My stuff's getting cold up here. I said, all I'm trying to do is get another cube of butter. I said, you know who I am, right? He goes, oh, yeah, I know who you are. I go, good. I said, I'm trying to get some butter. He goes, evidently you don't know who I am. I go, I don't. He goes, I'm in charge of the fucking butter. And he walked off. And I went, and that's what everybody did around me. And I just went.
I'm in charge of the butter.
He said, I'm in charge of the damn butter, and he walked off. And so that kind of tells you, keeps you in your
What a great story.
That keeps you in check.
Yeah. What a great story.
So there you go, boys.
By the way, you never played for Rangers. You played Astros. But was there any time that you almost got close to playing for the Rangers?
They were just – I thought I was going to get drafted by them early in my career. That was it, really. So I played – again, I played with the history was there. Yeah. And then going home to play, we flipped a football town into a baseball, you know, those 3 years. And I tease those guys. I have no idea how I won a Cy Young with Houston because we only had 3.5 hitters on the team. you couldn't give up anything. But they were wonderful. Just, again, you talk about the Hall of Fame. I have more guys that I owe a lot to being great teammates that are not in the Hall. You know, I'd be surprised if someone said that they didn't know where I stood when I was their teammate. So, but again, it was my that's my upbringing.
Well, much love to you, man. I appreciate you for coming out. Really enjoyed
it. This is
cool. I had no idea what direction. We had some stuff, but we had no idea what direction was going to go. But two hours felt like 5 minutes, bro.
Let's go.
Literally,
baby.
2 hours felt like 5 minutes.
Absolutely. This is cool. And thanks for what you guys do and what you guys did for us. And it's really cool.
Anytime, brother. Yeah, thanks for coming out.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
Hey, come back out and throw another softball.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Awesome.